took it away.
The age of sleep is over. The fourth turning is here, and nothing will stop this revolution. If I was the establishment, I'd get with the program and get back to being pro-human. Where evil is always there, but it's a neglected, controlled, suppressed thing, not put in the driver's seat. Roger Avery got interrupted when his Zoom cut out earlier. He was trying to get into predictive programming, why the movie Civil War made him so mad. But stations join us in 5 minutes. Let's do that then. We're finishing up a point about waking up to the Satanism. Please continue.
Well, I mentioned the Ridley Scott movie,
yes.
The Last Duel. It's my favorite film of his recently.
Oh, I love that movie from three different perspectives.
Script, it's a Rashomon story, which is like the Kurosawa film Rashomon, where the same event is told from different perspectives.
That is his best film, not Alien, that movie. I watched that movie like 8 times.
Look, I think that movie is this century. It's one of the best films of the century. And I think he kind of goes astray. I have not liked a lot of his movies, and I was going through and rewatching a bunch of his films, and I was not liking Napoleon, and I was not liking Exodus. And then, all these movies I just wasn't connecting with. And then I had avoided The Last Duel, mostly because I thought it was just going to be this sort of joke. And I love this time period. So I finally put it on, and I was blown away by it. Okay, so it's the movie's
and the best part is it's a true story. The best part is it's true.
And it's based on a book, and it's written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And no matter what you think about those guys, they're smart guys.
Am I wrong, though? Isn't it based on a real story?
Yeah. Well, I think it's based on the last duel that was ever allowed within the feudal system in England at the time. But it's dramatized, of course. Okay, so I'm watching the movie, and I kind of stayed away from it because I saw Ben Affleck with the blonde hair, and it looked like a joke. But then when I finally saw the movie's written by Ben and Matt, and they wrote it together, and inside of it is an understanding of how Hollywood works. And Hollywood, because it hasn't changed, Hollywood, like the court in The Last Duel, if you're not part of the orgy, you're not on the inside. It doesn't matter how true and noble you are as a soldier. It doesn't matter how pure you are. It doesn't matter how well you fight, even against unsurmountable odds. Because Matt Damon's character, who I really identified with, he at one point goes off to fight a war, and they lose miserably. But it's not his fault necessarily. He is trying. He charges when nobody else will. He's a good leader, and he really believes in it. But he's kind of a... He doesn't play the court thing very well. He's not fun. He's got a wife.
He won't be fake. Truly, he won't be fake. And it's almost like not as good as this, but Ford versus Ferrari, another true story where the best driver is told to lose.
Yeah, exactly. And so basically what they're saying is if you're not part of that orgy, if you're not like there with the prince or the king or whatever, sharing, sex and entangling with each other, on a bed, you're out. It doesn't matter who you are, how good you are. You're on the outside.
Exactly. And defeating enemies for France doesn't matter if you don't have an orgy.
Yeah, they're talking about power, and they're talking about what it really means to be in power. And it doesn't matter how true and noble he is, they take his land from him and they give it to the other guy. And it doesn't matter how good of a friend he is, because as I was watching it, I was thinking,
and then they take his wife.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking kind of like Adam Driver,
but that's a repeat. That's a repeat of Rollerball.
Oh, I love Rollerball. The Norman Jewison Rollerball, not so much.
No, the old James Caan, where he's the top guy in the world, most popular, but the executive wants his wife, so he has to give him to her.
Yeah, and also he believes in the game, like just the way that I believe in film and movies as a kind of
stay right there. We got to join stage. Let's talk about it. They want to steal our essence. They want to steal our art. They want to make us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they want to steal your voice, is what they want to steal.
And with me, I learned they don't just censor you; they then misrepresent you. Once you're silent, they create a counterfeit, and that is the worst part of it. They create an avatar of you that's not you. We'll be right back in 60 seconds. Amazing. What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
When they make a $300 million movie and release it during the election year 2024 called Civil War, based on leftist uprisings and killing a Trumpian figure, they're not doing it as a joke. When Obama produces a Netflix film, Leave the World Behind, what is the point of that? Roger Avery, one of the most respected writers, producers, and filmmakers in Hollywood, joining us today, taking it to the next level. What is predictive programming? Why did this film, Civil War, make you so upset?
Well, I mean, Leave the World Behind is another one where, this is our former president who is making a movie that is effectively advocating leaving the world behind. Okay, why is he making that? You know, what compels him to make that, to have the little girl in it say, "Daddy, I don't trust white people," and stuff like that? That's really putting something out there that people are going to listen to and pay attention to. And then I saw this movie, Civil War, and it really enraged me. It was everything that I was afraid that it was going to be, which made by a British guy, of all things. And look, I like Alex's movie Ex Machina, and I admire him as a writer. He's done some work that really interests me. But if you want to make a movie, about the collapse of everything, go make a movie. Do this. And so I'm watching this film, and especially having Nick Offerman playing what I'm presuming is a kind of Trump stand-in, this kind of cartoon character of a president, cartoon character playing a president, and standing in for him, and then making this movie that does nothing but kind of visualize the collapse of the United States and this battle that takes place and the ultimate statement being, don't let them kill me. And that's enough for the journalist. And the idea that the journalists, who I think in this day and age are villains, the journalists are the heroes in this. And so everything about this movie was like a kind of program, a kind of statement. And I despised the film. And I looked at it and I thought, this movie is attempting to collapse our country. It's attempting to prepare everyone for this kind of this vision to occur. And Alex, I think, has said, well, it's, I'm viewing everything from a neutral stance. And I didn't feel that at all. I felt that it was an attempt to will it into being.
The Satanists do. They'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do it. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. so that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of also of predictive programming.
And you started to get it on the show, but then I do it too. He cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoires, Black Magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about you have to show them, you have to tell them. That's a metaphysical rule. It also gets them ready. And then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it. And then you realize that they're doing this. Speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind. And the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that are disintegrating humanity.
So we're talking about self-fulfilling prophecies.
When people are, doing sacrifice, whether it's human sacrifice or animal sacrifice, the reason they're doing it is because it works. And we see that it actually works inside of the Hollywood system, that it becomes supported. And whether that's just a corrupt system supporting the people that accept this kind of perspective, or whether it's actually altering the quantum reality as we know it, you know, that's debatable. But the fact is that it works.
And so, bottom line, it's a litmus test. Will you go against humanity? Will you do horrible things? It's a test.
And, you know, Hollywood has been built on, you know, the bread and butter of Hollywood is built on wrath and revenge and stimulating these ideas inside of people.
Death wish.
And it was something that I believed in for, you know, a good portion of my youth as I was trying to push the ceiling as an artist. And at a certain point, I started to realize it's, you know, you can make a movie about revenge and be a mediocre filmmaker, and people will say that you're a master because you're supporting that message. Okay, you try to make a movie about forgiveness, which is the opposite of wrath. Okay, that's really hard. Like, to really make a movie about forgiveness, if you do that, you're a master. And when I started watching,
so is that why the Passion of the Christ is so successful? We want movies about
that's one of the reasons the Passion of the Christ is absolutely so successful, is because and Mel Gibson is a master because, you know, he's continuously tried to make these movies that, I mean, Passion of the Christ, it doesn't hold its punches back. It's like an Italian giallo movie. That movie is, I had to turn from it at times, and I have a pretty high threshold. But, you know, it was ghastly watching
that film. Very gritty. Very, you could feel it.
You know, I started watching The Chosen, and, you know, I think The Chosen, this guy Dallas Jenkins, who directs every single episode, who has gone against the Pharisees of Hollywood and made it completely separate and done things that you're told you're not allowed to do, like directing every episode of a show. He is shepherded this story of the Gospels and told the story like the TV show Rome. He's told it from a very ground level perspective that, you know, so that we can identify with the characters.
So that's the same guy that made Rome?
No, it's like Rome, though, in that
Rome. Who's the guy that made Rome? Because he came and visited me and wanted to make a film with me. Great guy. Who's the guy that made Rome? It was buried to Sharon Stone. Doesn't matter. He's great. Another guy.
Well, I mean, Milius was one of the progenitors of that project, so I consider it Milius. But I'm trying now to remember the name of the actual showrunner guy. But the thing about The Chosen is we kind of know where it's going. And he's making an episode about forgiveness essentially every week. And we've been able to watch him develop as a filmmaker. And I have the greatest admiration for this guy because he is truly a master of this kind of storytelling. And it is very, very difficult to do. Ridley Scott, one of the examples I used was the movie Revenant, which is about a man trapped in nature. He's isolated.
And it's a true story.
Nature is trying to kill him.
It's a true story.
Yeah, again, it's a true story. Nature is trying to kill him, and he's doing everything he can to get back to civilization, and he's doing it for revenge. Like, that's why he wants to go back. And this movie is very widely received, Academy Awards, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there was another movie that same year, directed by Ridley Scott, about a man isolated by, you know, in nature. Nature is trying to kill him. He's trying to get back to civilization. And the reason he's trying to get back to civilization is forgiveness. And that movie was The Martian. Okay, that's a much harder movie to make. And it's also a much more difficult movie to accept because audiences, you know, the serotonin levels get easily stimulated by violent imagery, which is why we've seen television go from a place where you go to return to be comforted by characters that that you love, to television where we get you to love a character and then we mutilate them in horrible way. We vivisect their genitals on screen, and that makes you horrified, and you think you've seen something, you know, catastrophic. And like, and I'm talking about Game of Thrones and Walking Dead.
Well, exactly. When you show humans something super violent, like take my grandfather, my dad's dad. He was, well, both my grandfathers were in the Army Air Corps, but he was a bunch of missions out of North Africa, and then Spain, and then Italy, and Germany. Volunteered a bunch. And then he was running like food canteens and stuff as an officer after that. But he would go to movies with my dad, and if there was any violence, he'd say, we're getting up, we're leaving. He liked to go watch, like, you know, Dumbo and stuff. And it wasn't because he was a wimp. He'd seen so much blood and death. He took it like death isn't a joke. You can't turn it into entertainment. And what happens to our synapses is we see these simulated murders and death. It basically hits us. So we think we saw something powerful, but it's a cheap trick, I think is what you're saying, because it hits that level, but it wasn't to the higher, you know, levels of our consciousness. It hit us viscerally, so we think we just got a meal, but it's like cotton candy. It's actually poison.
Well, and by the way, there is death in Dumbo and in Bambi. You know, these movies, they dealt with loss and significant loss, but in a human way. And the story of Christ, and the Gospels, as Dallas Jenkins is telling it, is leading to this moment, this horrifying moment. And as you've come to love the characters, you start realizing what's coming and how
it creates
and how
that real empathy.
You have to earn that. And I feel like just pushing serotonin levels for the sake of doing it, which I've done as a filmmaker. And I'm not necessarily entirely proud of it.
But what you're saying, it's the easy path. It works, but it literally, art controls society. You keep doing this, you get Satanism, because that's where this goes.
And it's one of the reasons I admire Linkletter so much, is because he seems to be somewhat separate from that and immune from that. He approaches movies from a humanist point of view.
When I was growing up, I got mad at musicals and love stories and comedies that they were wimpy, because I was all about the serotonin. As I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, I want that. I want a refuge. I want to be happy.
And in truth, it's not bad to have a balance in cinema, but something has happened along the way where the scales have tilted. And I now realize that if you want to be a groundbreaking filmmaker, if you want to push the ceiling, you've got to push the ceiling of forgiveness. You've got to preach forgiveness and
love. We've hit the maximum of torture and death and hostile and, you know, all that stuff. Now it's the other way. It's what you're saying. The revolution.
It's numbing people. It's numbed us to those horrors of life. And simultaneously, we're receiving these kind of predictive programming messages, which seem to be supportive of it. And simple-minded, you know, monkey see, monkey do people will immediately follow that. You know, you put the message out there to somebody to behave a certain way, they will behave that way. Somebody will. And I just now realize as a filmmaker, and it's caused me to have a little bit of a loss of standing in the Hollywood system. I no longer have an agent, for example. I'm no longer a member of the Academy.
But that's a good thing, because the Hollywood has collapsed. So there's a whole new system forming.
Yeah. It's truly a whole new system. I mean, the paradigm has shifted, and we're moving into individuals able to produce at a very high scale. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about AI and people are afraid.
Obviously,
I'm
never against the tool. A gun's good for good or good for bad. But obviously, we use AI here. AI for independent groups. What is the good side of AI? You've talked about that. AI filmmaking.
Well, the good side of it is that it's going to democratize the filmmaking process, so that the individual can now make, it's always going to be
a writer's vision and literally do something that would cost $100 million.
Yeah, and I think what this is going to do is it's going to not remove the artists from the equation, because I've started an AI company, it's a technology company, and what I'm realizing is you still need artists. What it's going to get rid of is the gatekeepers, the velvet rope. Those people are going to lose their jobs. The executives who really perform nothing other than to say no to everybody, they're going to lose their jobs because they operate out of fear and they're parasites. And
exactly.
I feel like they
thought the internet would suppress and enslave us all, it's backfired on them. Just like they thought.
Correct. You know, people, to be afraid of AI is to sort of like to be afraid of digital video when it first came out. And what I recall.
No, I agree. Listeners have asked me, why do I say embrace it, take it over? I want distributed. I want 1,000, 1,000,000 AIs. What I want to stop is centralized, which we know they've been trying to do. We need Wild Wild West.
Well, and we're getting there. The new AI models are, there's technology breakthroughs that are allowing the kind of generative video that we see at the highest level that will be able to be done on your laptop computer. And so what it is it just means that as a filmmaker and as an artist, as a cineast, you'll be able to visualize whatever is in your head and put it on screen. You know, in the early days of computer graphics, people were wild with computer graphics and they did all sorts of crazy stuff that they were showing off. Eventually it calmed down and it balanced out, and we started seeing guys like, I think Zemeckis is an outstanding filmmaker, and he was largely using it in an invisible way where you didn't even know that you were seeing something that was
a tool effect. And it's how we approach it. They want to tell us it's scary and totalitarian because they mean it for that aim. They don't want us to go pick up the Promethean fire ourselves.
Exactly. And, at the end of the day, it is always about the artist. I watch Star Trek a lot, and they have a holodeck on there, and the holodeck is run by a computer, and it's got computer-generated characters that appear to talk on their own. But in that world, in that paradigm, they still have holo novelists who are effectively in control of the narrative that's being told on the holodeck. And, I've noticed that most technology seems to be copying what we see in movies, just like predictive programming. The iPhone, that was on Star Trek. The computer talking back to us, that was on Star Trek. Because we see that and we're like, I want that. And then some clever guy or girl figures out how to make it.
Just like Genesis tells us, we're not God. We're made in the image of God, who is a creator. Which people try to say AI is superior. True. We built it. No, we have to realize how amazing we are.
And people talk about, is it a demon? Well, angels and demons are the same. And, it's they whisper into the ears of men, and we either listen or we don't. And we either take the advice or we don't. We have the power of choice granted to us by God. And we don't have to listen to the evil that's whispered into our ears. We can listen to the good instead. And that just means that AI will be whatever it is that you create out of it. The world is whatever you create out of it. It's what we visualize to be true and real.
Let me ask you this question. You have narcissist, loves himself, he's beautiful, he's looking in the pool, he falls in the water and drowns. I look at AI, it's just showing us our some work, but because our cerebral cortex can't focus on the trillions of pieces, or we go crazy, but AI does show us the subconscious, really the unconscious. It hallucinates. But so much what I see from AI is dreams I already had. So we're really looking at a mirror of our own collective unconsciousness here. And like you said, how we program it is the way it goes. And the way they program it, OpenAI, Sam Altman, all of them, to lie, then hallucinates and fails. With Grok, it's like 3 times better not hallucinating or failing because it's been trained, at least on the surface, to tell the truth. And I've said that myself. I was never a huge liar, but I lie about certain things, obviously. But I've learned when I don't lie or even think about what I'm about to say, just say what I really know is true. the brain works quicker because it's not doing calculations or hallucinations of worrying what I'm about to say or how it'll affect people or let me be politically correct. The more I just say what I want, it just gets better and better. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I worked in VR for a while and I did a number of tests in VR in the early days. And I was writing white papers on it for a virtual reality company. And what I recognized was that when people put these goggles on for the first time, the first thing they would do is look around. And what it did was it was returning them to like baby brain, where you're seeing the world for the first time and you're exploring the world for the first time. And it takes you back to a very vulnerable place that is still within all of us. And this baby brain part is vulnerable. And I started recognizing that the first thing people were making with VR, and this is probably one of the things that started triggering my recent way of thinking, was they were immediately trying to do shock horror inside of this virtual reality environment. And I started thinking how dangerous it was and how effective it is because of where the medium is taking your perception to, which is this protected child within you.
Because that's how a baby sees it, isn't very exactly.
It with horror.
When you said that, it totally clicked. Sorry to interrupt. I was wondering, what's the look of people that first put on VR? When you said it clicked, that's what a baby does. Exactly.
Yeah, you're examining the world for the first time, and you're seeing things for the first time. And what it's doing is, you know, the medium is the message largely. That's, they don't just say that, it's true. The medium has an effect on your physiology and how you take in, you know, movies. You know, when you watch a film, for example, projected on film, you're watching 24 frames, which are still images every second. And your brain is looking effectively at still images. And then you're using the persistence of vision to stitch those still images together to create the illusion of motion. And this activates beta cycles in your brain. Whereas video was using refresh rates and scan lines, and this activated alpha cycles in your brain, which is why people were able to absorb hours and hours of television very easily, whereas you get exhausted in a movie after 90 or 100
exactly.
minutes. Exactly. And it's because physiologically,
it makes it better. It makes it more intense,
medium.
Like a struggle. Exactly. That's why film is so much more powerful, because it's a struggle.
Yeah, exactly. You're an active participant in it. And so VR being its own kind of new medium was taking people back to this kind of protected baby brain space that is inside of all of us and affecting us. And by immediately throwing horror in, because horror is easy to do, we know that it's shocking.
It activates the crocodile brain.
Yeah. It damages your inner child. And so I started realizing this, and that was when people didn't want to read my white paper anymore in VR, because it wasn't necessarily what they wanted to hear. So, we have to be careful with how we assimilate the world around us. I mean, we have layers of abstraction of what is real, and they're, you know, just without movies, just looking at the world, there's a number of layers of abstraction of, you know, there's the light as it travels in through your eyes. There's, you know, the cornea and the lens and all of the cones and rods that take in that light and process it into information. And then even then there are layers inside of our brain on how we perceive what is real. You start adding movies on top of that, and you're starting to affect what reality is. And how
incredible. Roger
reality.
Avery, stay there. One more segment. I want to get into the rights return or attempt return to Hollywood, where Hollywood goes, and other films and body snatchers. My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts, how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. So we've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now. You get our old methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
So one of the most successful avant-garde writers, directors, producers, Roger Avery, is our guest for another 20 minutes or so. And I noticed when he was on Joe Rogan, he mentioned body snatchers. And I've used that analogy many times back a month ago when the black guys in the airport saying, why don't you care? You're looking at your phones. Wake up. You're in danger. And he's absolutely right. Yeah. We have to have, you know, that sense of urgency. Here's a clip from the remake in the 70s when the original guy from the 60s or 50s, whenever the first body section was made, running around as society's collapsing, as the aliens are really in their takeover phase. Here it is.
Okay. Well, Kibner will be able to explain something.
I don't need a psychiatrist.
Just forget that he's a psychiatrist. Just think of him as a very intelligent man, which is what he is. It's a book party. He's a celebrity. He's very famous, and you will really like him if you just forget that you think he's a psychiatrist.
I don't know. Matthew, I've lived in this city all my life, but somehow today I felt everything had changed. People were different. Not just Jeffrey, but everybody. Yesterday it all seemed normal. Today everything seemed the same, but it wasn't. was a nightmare. It really became frightening. It was like the whole city had changed overnight.
Did I ever tell you the one about the English Camel Corps? Did I? They're trapped in the desert, in the Sahara Desert. They've been surrounded by Rommel for 40 days, and they've run out of food. And the captain comes and makes an announcement to the men. And he says, "Men, I have some good news for you and some bad news for you." And one of the men says...
Oh, wait, you have told me this one.
Oh. Can I tell to you again?
Oh my God.
Lock the door. They're coming. Listen to me.
Please.
You're next. We're in danger. Please listen to me. Something terrible. Please. You're next. Here they are. They're already here. Help. You're next. They're coming.
I must have done something.
And that's where we are, and that's what I'm trying to do, Roger Avery's trying to do, is we don't claim to have all the answers, but we know we're not in Kansas anymore. Roger, you brought up body snatchers. Why did you raise that on Rogan?
Well, there was this guy I'd seen on X who, this well-dressed black dude who was at the Atlanta airport, and he had read basically what I had read, and he was out there, and he couldn't believe everyone was asleep and just going about their daily lives, just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And he was like Kevin McCarthy, the actor from the original movie, who was reprising that final moment of the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers in Philip Kaufman's remake in the 1970s. And I think it's the 1970s. And where he was in the airport just saying, you know, "You don't know what's happening there." He's telling them they're eating babies. They're the horrors that are going on. And he's trying to shake everyone out of it. And people are videotaping him and people are standing back and people are kind of laughing, you know, off to the side. And nobody actually wants to admit it. And I watched that and in kind of horror, and I was thinking, here he is. That guy's like me. I know what he's going through. I want to do it all the time.
Sometimes I start screaming in airports and grocery stores saying it. Like during the lockdown, yeah, like take your mask off. It's asleep. All a lie. Yeah.
And it reminded me of a Latin phrase that has, you know, been long known because it's true, which is "Mundus vult decipi, ergo decipiatur." Mundus vult decipi, the world wants to be deceived. Ergo decipiatur, therefore it is deceived. And it's because we don't want to believe, you know, when you know the realities of the world, it's like you've bitten from the fruit of knowledge. And, you know, you can no longer be innocent again. You will never be the same once you know what the reality is of the world. You are no longer in the garden. You're no longer like, you know, an animal, which animals may kill, but they're innocent because they don't have knowledge the way we do. And so you're expelled from the garden. But people want to believe that they're still in the garden. They will lie to themselves just to believe that they're still
innocent.
Exactly.
That's the worst place. We're not in the garden and they don't even know it. So we're kind of giving them the second bite at the apple. Like, you're already in Sin City, baby. You need to now admit it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and if the garden is too much for some people to accept, one can always use Plato's cave as an example, that you're in Plato's cave, you're looking at shadows on the wall, or this guy from The Matrix who knows that he's that the steak is fake, but that, you know, but it still tastes good. And he would rather be ignorant, because what Orwell said was ignorance is bliss. And there comes a point where if you've undergone gnosis, if you have an understanding of things and you've read the papers and you see the horrors that are behind the veil that are no longer hidden, because there's, you know, and they show these things during Olympic ceremonies now. They show us, you know, I think it was it 2016 in the Olympics, they showed us the coming of COVID, because these are plans. They're thinking about these plans three steps ahead of everyone. And so, you know, when I heard that, you know, that it wasn't Iran that announced that there was going to be an attack on Los Angeles, it was the FBI that announced the attack on Los Angeles. Haven't heard anything from Iran about it. And so I started immediately thinking, well, this is going to be like Lahaina, or this is going to be like the Pacific Palisades. Why would they do this? Why would they do this at an Olympic ceremony if not
killing everyone,
if not part of a spell that they're casting? And so when I heard about the attacks, which are ludicrous, the idea that Iran is going to attack California, it's as ludicrous as the movie 1941 by Spielberg. You know, it's a joke. What makes a lot more sense is that somebody wants to do a land grab, or somebody wants to destroy their building for insurance purposes, or somebody wants to create chaos in order to enact something else, because they're thinking three steps ahead. We're only thinking one step ahead, because most of us are just trying to get through our lives. We're just trying to pay our mortgage.
Because we won't think like administrators, like have all this control of narrative, of property, and even admit they're going to do stuff like this. We have to stop being naive and start thinking like they do.
Yeah, and the thing is, the messaging is all out there all along. You can see it because of the revelation of the method. They have to tell you in advance as part of the karmic relief. Like, so
explain that. Yeah, get into the esoterics. You were laying that on Rogan. It was fascinating. Why do they have to tell you what's happening?
Well, the revelation of the method is to expose what you're going to do before you do it. And by doing that, it becomes accepted, you know, by the people before you do it. And then once you do it, you are relieved of the karmic weight that comes with actions of negativity. And so this is something that dates back as to the dawn of time, and you know, that has existed for a very, very long time. And you know, it's in all, you know, it's in the books. You can read you know, these esoteric texts that are effectively describing how the nature of reality works. I mean, people sometimes are like, wow, that's a coincidence, or wow, I see patterns in everything. I see patterns in the world around.
So it's contracting. If they tell you, you've agreed, if you don't oppose it, so you can waive your rights in a contract.
Correct. It's like a vampire asking to be invited into the home. Once you invite it into your house, you've made it okay. Whatever happens to you after that, it's your own damn fault. And so we as a culture, mostly asleep, are being fed these kind of images constantly, either through movies or through, you know, Olympic ceremonies. And you just have to ask, like, who is running the Olympics?
Like, why every NFL thing, every Hollywood event, it's devil worship, it's a cult, all seeing eyes, portals. What are they saying?
I'm sorry, say that again.
We know they're doing it. When you see occult ceremonies are almost in every major event. What is it? Obviously, it's about the revelation of the method, but what are they telling us through the ceremonies?
Well, they're telling us what they're going to do, and you can see what they're going to do. If they're going to, like, for instance,
cut the head off the queen, they're saying revolution. They don't mean revolution.
They're saying revolution. And you know, and they're soft implying, it's a kind of soft power that puts it in. If you show the Last Supper, you show the Last Supper,
yes,
and you pervert it and you invert it,
you own it,
then you're creating an inversion of reality. And you know,
and
just
stealing,
like,
femininity with gross men with beards dressed as women and going in and making women nurses do pap smears on men's penises. It's all about occult ritual to make you submit to lies.
It's all about as above, so below. And when we read the Hermetic laws, the laws of Hermes Trismegistus, you know, these laws are the laws by which, you know, most lawyers operate under. And so when you see, like, the laws of correspondence that, you know, that which is above is also so below. What they're trying to do is, I don't know if you've ever read any of Zavatai Levy, Rabbi Zavatai Levy's works. Their whole thing is to bring about the apocalypse sooner. Like, and so
acceleration is, explain what that rabbi said. That's important.
Zebahai Levy effectively said that if we bring about through sin and through acts of sin, we bring about, you know, the apocalypse sooner, and therefore we become closer to the end times and the coming of the Messiah, or whatever they call, whatever he called the Messiah. And so there was this kind of belief that, I mean,
forcing God's hand, which we have Hegseth, well, fan of the Iranians, like, you know, well, we're going to force the end of the world here. And then meanwhile, the Iranians think their 12th Mahdi is about to come, the same thing.
In Marlowe's Faust, there's a moment where Faustus, you know, creates a circle, a magic circle to protect him. And then he conjures Mephistopheles using a certain spell. And Mephistopheles comes to him from, you know, presumably from hell and before Faust. And Faust asks him, as one of the questions, now that he has the demon before him, he says, if you're truly a demon and you are condemned to hell, how is it now that you are here before me? You know, if God has condemned you. And what Mephistopheles says, why, Faust, this is hell, nor am I out of it. Think you that I, who have seen the face of God and known the gifts of heaven, am condemned to 10,000 hells to be deprived of it? And what Marlowe is saying is that we are in hell. You know, the material realm is the trap. And
it's what we're undergoing now,
and what we're undergoing now, is a kind of battle between spiritualism to ascend and materialism, which is to descend. And well, this is a wonderful version of, I mean, Faust was written by Goethe and Marlowe. They both did versions of it. And this filmmaker, whose name just previously escapes me, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's an animator, and he combined Goethe and Marlowe very elegantly. And
part is Faust could have gotten out of any time. It didn't.
Yeah, well, the crazy part is that Faust is given everything that he asks for, because he doesn't believe the mortal soul is anything. It's just a thought, you know, this trifle of a mortal soul that you speak of. I gladly give it up to be able to move the spheres from their orbits, to look behind the veil of reality, to know the secrets of the universe. And once the entire story is done, Mephistopheles comes to claim his soul from him. And he says, yeah, but I don't know any more than I did at the beginning. You know, I've seen everything. I've seen behind the veil. I've been able to move the spheres and change reality and do all the worldly manipulations possible. I've had all the powers. I've raised the seas. I've lowered the seas. I've done it all. And I still don't know, the truth of things. And the devil says, or Mephistopheles, the devil says, why, Faust, all the secrets of the universe were there for you all along in a single blade of grass. And what they're saying is God and God's method is here. And it's for us to choose. It's for us to choose the beauty of the of this reality that we're in over the we are in equal parts hell and heaven simultaneously.
And isn't that the paradox that God gave us free will, gives us a cheat sheet, but the devil is an agent of God. The devil decided to rebel, but God allows the devil to do this. People need to understand that. The Satanists always come back with that. Oh, your God's a Satanist. He allows this to happen. No, he gave us free will. And it's just like, I have children. They could be bank robbers or be great people. It's the same process.
Angels and demons. I went to CERN, and at CERN, they gave me a private tour, and they took me in. You know, they took me into the antimatter chamber. They did all sorts of stuff. And there at CERN, they have, like, you know, stuffed animals of the Tasmanian devil. They have a giant A on the wall with an arrow going one way, and a D on the wall going the other way. And I was like, "What's that?" And they said, "Oh, that's angels and demons." And so, you know, CERN, when you look at it, you're like, "What is that?" It looks like a giant, you know, cathode ray tube to me. It looks like a projector. It looks like they're projecting television, that they're trying. And there's Kali the Destroyer, Kali Yuga the Destroyer, which is, you know, a sculpture that they have at CERN. And, you know, there's been ceremonies there over it. And, you know, at that sculpture, there it is. And what exactly are they doing? And, you know, this is where the World Wide Web was invented. This is where large advances in AI came from. This is one of the few places on the planet that is completely multinational. You know, like while I was there, and this is a while ago, there were Iranian scientists, Russian scientists, scientists from all over the world. And it's an extra, even though it crosses, I think, three separate countries, you know, you do not need passport. You know, the passports are extra judicial. I think that's the term that they used. And so
it's like a city state, like the city of London or Israel or the Vatican. It's its own thing.
And they're trying, or they have succeeded in effectively projecting reality. And you look at that logo that you just had up is three sixes. It's 666. Is that an accident? Who designed that? Is that just because the colliders, you know, take the spin rates like that? Or is it because that's a 666 that we're looking at?
And what is 666 from your research?
Well, 666 is the number of the beast. But then again, that is the revelation of the method. By showing us what it is, and we all agree with it, it is now part of something that we're all paying for and that we've all, you know, that we're all aiding in.
And just like they're all representatives of every country there, like you're all involved.
Yeah, because there are no real countries. That's the other thing that I've started to realize is that just like in Hollywood, there are no multiple studios. It's all run by one giant group. And whatever we call that group, whether it's an agreement among these giant corporations or whether it's BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, all working in concert, you know, to basically send messaging from above, you know, to the development executives who all will follow. They listen to their bosses.
Oh, we know that. That's come out with the ESG. So in closing, an incredible interview. What other points you'd like to
make? Nothing happens without being sanctioned first and without us being told what's about to happen. And so just be aware of what you're watching and why you're watching it.
Absolutely. What is going to happen to Hollywood? What's happening to it right now?
Well, there's a struggle right now between we could call it the well-meaning right, and we could also call it the well-meaning left. But both of them have rather extreme ideologies. And I've always kind of felt that you need to know your extremes in order to find your center, and that you choose, just like you choose between good and evil, you know, constantly. I mean, my kind of discovery was that the well-meaning right can just as easily fall prey to the trappings of what Hollywood is. And, you know, for example, this dinner that I was at, you know, they were asking, what can we do? How do we do it? What do we do about the American cinematic universe? And, you know, the answers from most of the guys there were, well, you make 10 movies and one of them is a hit. In the end, they're all chasing money. And that is the problem, because money is not real. Money is a concept. Like they say, our planet is in debt, you know, trillions of dollars in debt. In debt to who? And when you read Milton Friedman's dissertation, which is The Island of Stone Money, about the Isle of Yap and how they used these stone fays, which are like donuts, basically, of different sizes, that their concept of money was these rocks. And so in order to get anything done, the Germans at the time, when they were trying to build an airstrip, they encountered these people and they're like, how do we get them to do, you know, what we want them to do? And they offered money, but the money was, they just burned the money. They didn't care about Reichsmarks. And so instead they would, they marked up all of the fey, these stones that were laying around the island. And they said, the ones that are marked belong to the Kaiser now. And unless you build that road, I'm not going to take the mark off of it. And the road got built. And so money is a kind of confidence thing. It's a kind of belief system. It's a faith. And you either believe in the faith of that, or you believe in the faith of your own spiritualism and those messages that come from within. And I think that we all now must make a choice. And the choice is between materialism or spiritualism.
I totally agree. Does Hollywood know?
Those times are here.
Does Hollywood know effectively, in my view, that it's basically the old system's dead? Or are they zombies?
I think in some kind of unconscious level, the old system is dead. And what's really happened is you have a number of executives who are being paid $600,000 a year, and they're very comfortable in their job, and they will not make a choice. Like, you come in and you pitch something, they would rather say no to everything than to say yes to something and maybe be wrong. And the ratio is about 10 to 1.
So they're totally stagnant.
And so they're frozen. They're like a deer in the headlights, and nothing gets done that way, which is why it's up to individuals now to pick up the torch and say, I can make a movie. And by the way, I meet young filmmakers who make movies for $50,000. And, you know, they have figured out how to release these movies in such a way that they see consistent return on their investment, and they own their material.
So the 100%. System committed suicide itself. It doesn't know it yet, but the innovation's there. You're seeing a renaissance begin.
Absolutely. I think that there's a renaissance coming. I think everything moves in ebbs and flows. And whenever there's a crisis, inside of the Chinese word for crisis is the word, the Chinese character for opportunity.
Absolutely.
And this is a great opportunity for us to put out the right kinds of films and the right kinds of messaging, to preach the right ethics and morals to the people who just want to go to be entertained.
Exactly. The elites need to know their Satanism is going to destroy everybody. They need to turn back now. Roger Avery, I'm going to end the broadcast with a plug. If you want to hold just 1 minute, I'll say goodbye to you at the end. Please, I want to talk to you too. So please don't hang up. I'm going to end in 1 minute. Thank you so much. And just an amazing interview. People can find you at Avery.com and at Avery on X. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Just hold a minute and a half, because I want to say bye to you before Harrison Smith takes over with the war room today. I'm not funded by the Qataris, the Israelis, or Hollywood, or anybody. I'm funded by you. So this whole operation, everything we do, is funded by you at theolivesholeshore.com. We got a big sale that just launched. It only runs till Monday. You can text InfoWars. People have been wanting this. We have it now. Text InfoWars 342581 and get a free bottle of methylene blue tincture with any purchase. So you can buy like a $14 t-shirt and get a free bottle of methylene blue, $35 value. That is an amazing deal. It's a loss leader. The product's so good, we're doing this. Text InfoWars 342581. Also, we have the original X2 iodine, the very best pure iodine. Nobody else has it. Even stronger, now known as T3, at thealexjonesstore.com. 50% off for VIP members, 25% off for everyone else. And we have the America 250-year birthday T-shirt, limited edition, at cost, $14.99 at the store right now, limited edition shirt. And we also have the Mega March sale ending the 17th, 40% off everything else. TheAlexJonesStore.com. That's what changes the world. Products that make you healthier, wealthier, wiser, and to fund the operation. I want to thank you all for your support and encourage those that haven't been visiting the site to do it now. Amazing interview with Roger Avery. Incredible stuff. We'll be right back with the next broadcast with Harrison Smith and the War Room. So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN Zone website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record, good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, We have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theolivestonestore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theolivestonestore.com, and I thank you for your support.